pittance. For some people, it was $6,500 for a death at the end of the day. And the cost was still there because the state still has not admitted responsibility, still denies that anything happened to that.
A comment on the prison strike today.
Well, I think we are back here, and we are back here in no small part because the nation failed to learn the lessons of Attica, and we created one of the most brutal prison societies in the world. And as was the case in Attica, when you treat people as animals and they are human beings, they will resist, and we are seeing that across the country again today.
Heather Ann Thompson, we want to thank you for being with us, author of Blood in the Water, the Attica Prison Uprising in 1971, its legacy, and David Rothenberg, member of the Attica Observers Committee. Thanks for joining us, and founder of the Fortune Society. That does it for the show tonight. Nermeen Sheikh and I will be speaking at 6:30 at the Toronto International Film Festival at the premiere of All Governments Lie documentary world premiere. On Saturday, we'll be at 1:30. Check democracynow.org for details. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Sam Alkoff, Robbie Karen, Honey Masood, Trina Dura. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is WHFR Dearborn. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Yes, we're back live in the studio today. School has started, oh my goodness, 2 weeks ago. But because of Labor Day weekend and some special programming we had for you, the new WHFR Journal, which is local news and alternative views. For those regular listeners, you already know that. And we had special programming last week starting at 12 noon. All the way to 2 o'clock. We had an hour-long interview done on a national show called On Point that we played for you with Gary Johnson, Libertarian Party presidential candidate. And then in the second hour, On Point's great interview with Jill Stein, who is the Green Party presidential candidate. Both of them will be on the ballot here in Michigan and most other states. And if people vote for them, either one could win the presidency. Okay, and so I made sure that both of those hours, including the 12 to 1 o'clock one, are now available to listen to. If you missed them, if you were out of town, as I was last week, you can go to whfr.fm, and you can click on the talk show button right in the middle, then choose WHFR Journal, this show's podcast list, and you can, you know, for September 2nd, 9 to 16, you'll see both of those shows there. And you can listen to either one, and I certainly recommend that you listen to both if you really want to find out about those two other candidates for office. By the way, my name is Jay Koronek, station advisor here at WHFR.fm, and as usual, joined in the studio by our WHFR news director, John Conroy. Were you out of town last weekend too, John?
I was not last weekend, no.
Oh, well, you're out of town a lot anyway. This guy goes everywhere, but still usually is here for Friday. Okay.
Yep.
Special guest coming in. Oh, boy. Very exciting. So we got a lot of stories to talk about from the last 2 weeks. I've got the stack of newspapers here. Let me grab my sack. And we've got our special guest coming in the studio in just a second when I see the big door open. I think he's hugging Kitty Love out in the office, but okay, here he comes.
He's on his way. Yep.
Dun, 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 dun. No, it's Steve Glazer, who is the art professor in the ceramics area here at Henry Ford College. Welcome, Steve.
Hey, how you doing, Jay?
I'm going to turn your microphone on so people can hear you. You're right there on mic number one. So, how are you doing anyway?
I'm doing pretty good.
Okay, it's kind of rough.
It's just like it's a hot
beginning of the semester. It's really warm over in fine arts.
Especially if you've got those big ovens that are baking all the time. Of course, those are outdoors.
No, they're indoor.
Oh, kiln. The kilns are kilns.
Yes, six kilns. Of them are in.
Six of
wait,
them.
Six are indoor, one is outdoor right now.
Oh, okay. And that's where they bake, if you will.
Or heat up fire.
Fire the clay. Fire
the clay.
Okay. Well, thank you for being on the Journal. You've actually been in the studio many times because Steve is a big blues supporter here. He's been on Highway 61 show several times as a guest and coming during our Radiothon time to help us plug. And thank you for helping us set up our CD sale, too, on Homecoming Friday. And then, of course, because he was right there anyway, he was able to get first choice of blues CDs that might be available.
Been on Motor Live once.
Absolutely, yeah. And, of course, your brother is your blues connection is especially because it's in the family.
Howard
Glaser is one of the great blues musicians in Detroit for many, many years, and we featured him on WHFR many times, and he performed at the memorial for Joanne Korchinska that we did at Hastings Street a couple months ago. You got up there, too.
We both played with Harmonica Shaw.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so thank you very much for all of those connections. But his day job, folks, is a big one. As I said when he was coming in, he's a full-time art instructor, art professor here at Henry Ford College, and his area is ceramics. And for some people, though, I was in Toronto a couple weeks ago, a little vacation with my granddaughter, and I couldn't get her to go in the Gardner Museum. I don't know if you know the Gardner. It's a big ceramics museum.
I know of it. I
right across it. from the Royal Ontario Museum. Of course,
I've never been to Toronto.
She just came out of the Royal Ontario Museum, which is monstrously huge. We spent 4 or 5 hours walking around. Didn't even get. So she was a little tired. She's only 8, so I'll give her a break here. Because she looked at the signs and she said, dishware? Oh. I had some pictures of some ceramics, but it was primarily plates and cups.
Yeah.
But it's a lot more than that. Why don't you just describe the range of artistic endeavor that really encompasses ceramics?
Yeah, the range is like quite large. It's like I'm motion with my hands, and it's like you can't see that on the radio. But it ranges from normal everyday, your plates, your cups, and stuff. There's to a lot of things that people don't think about. There's the whole industrial side, because it's like, often with a beginning class, or I'll walk into, an elementary school or junior high school and say, okay, what have you done in clay today? And they all look at me dumbfounded. And it's like, how many of you went to the bathroom? Well, your toilets, they're ceramic. Made out of clay.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
If you live in a brick house, the brick is clay.
Mm-hmm.
Those big, sort of reddish orange terracotta colored, because terracotta is a type of clay. Mm-hmm. Sewer piping, industrial piping is all clay. Mm-hmm. And it's like, so there's that side of ceramics. Some of your high speed capacitors are made out of clay.
The electronics industry needs it too.
Mm-hmm. Because the heat doesn't hurt it.
Right.
The shields of the space shuttle are clay because of the heat.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Although they lose a few of those tiles. They actually call them tiles when the because I'm not
actually
they're not flying the space shuttle.
There's
anymore,
kind of a funny story about it that I could relate to that. I taught at North Dakota State for 2 years in the mid '80s, and one of the science programs at North Dakota State had developed the tiles for the space shuttle.
There you go.
And it's like, okay. Or had developed the polymer to hold the tiles on.
Right, that's important, yeah.
Yeah.
Not just
and
the tiles.
And a few of them fell off.
Well, of course.
But it's like.
Well, I think it was intentional. They always checked them after each flight, and they had to replace some of them. Mm-hmm. Because of that, there's vibration and all that
stuff.
So there's certainly the very valuable functional aspect. But
then the whole sculptural attitude.
Right,
and that goes back, centuries. It's like the huge terracotta figures that the life size or bigger than life size terracotta figures that they found in China.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like
all the buried soldier type statues, but they were like larger than life.
Yeah,
weren't they? Like 12 foot, 15 foot high or something.
It's like, I started to say life size, it's like larger than life.
And that'll start with clay. Oh, and another thing, though, it started, I think, in the 50s, but it's still done today, is that when they're doing design work for new automobiles, they always do a clay model. There's so many advantages, and I can't think of what they are. But they and it's not like, I don't think they finally baked the clay model or anything.
No, they're
huge. They're life size.
In fact, a friend of mine, I don't know if do names. Is
yeah,
it okay?
Sure,
Jim Adair,
okay.
Who is president of the Michigan Ceramic Arts Association, and does pottery clay as a hobby, but worked for years and is now retired from being a modeler at GM and is now head of the modeling area at College for Creative Studies.
He took me through one day,
and it's like, you know, seeing what the students have to do, the various steps from going from copying a in-production car from the blueprints, taking blueprints, making clay, and then coming up with their own
design. It's important to get it into reality from like the computer graphics design or something. They've got to actually, there's things they can learn from actually making it. And
well, it looks, something looks different when it's sitting totally in front of you than, even though, like, than on a screen.
Right. There's the heft or the weight that's perceived by the model that's real.
Yeah.
But okay, and of course the works that are just pieces of art. I saw the display. First of all, Steve is also of course Steve and his students, they regularly sell their work at various festivals and displays, both on campus and off campus. This summer, I know you were at Dearborn Homecoming. You're usually at the Wyandotte Art Fair?
We used to be. We haven't done it the last two or three years, last 4 years.
Where else did you go this summer that I missed?
That was it. Homecoming was our big push. And it was more of, homecoming is fun, and it's not really about making money or selling. It's about trying to connect with the community.
Sure, of
and
course.
Being out there for the Dearborn community and whoever else wants to come, you know, to homecoming, because it's open to the public. And
were you doing some demonstrations for the Friday market too at one point? Maybe not this year, but
we used to. We haven't done it in a couple of years because it's so much. For me, as instructor, it's I have to organize a group of students. I have to organize the equipment, get it up from the basement, or pack it up and get it over there. And it's like, sometimes we have help from the school, but just as often we don't.
Yeah.
Like, this past year, to go to homecoming, they helped me load a school van. But that was it.
And you had to drive it over.
Yeah, I had to drive it over there, and it's unload it, and then pack up. And brought everything, the stuff that we used. It's like pack everything up and stuff. And it's like sometimes it's really hard organizing students to do it when they don't get anything.
It's an important outreach whenever it's possible. Certainly WHFR with our 50-plus volunteers, and it varies from time to time.
Yeah.
But we depend on their time and availability to do these extra projects.
You run into a problem
where you just can't do it all.
Yeah, someone that you usually count on, it's like they have other engagements planned. Mm-hmm. They have a family engagement, or someone passes away or something, and it's like,
Well, I think you're doing a great job. I saw some pieces. I guess you had done them yourself, since you're definitely a great ceramics artist, that are like wall hangings, that almost like tribal masks, I think I described them, African or something.
Yeah.
But more than that, I mean, it wasn't
clearly
African.
Series it was I've been working on for
so
about
unique.
4 or 5 years.
Such beautiful stuff. And I hope you get into a gallery display sometime. Have you been recently?
Not recently.
Okay.
Last summer, I was one of five people that was in a group exhibition at the Buckham Gallery in Flint.
Yeah, I think it's
But each person's work was divided into their own sections. So I think 35 or 40 of the masks up there.
Well, you are also, though, director of our gallery on campus. Of course, you can't just put your own stuff in there all the time.
And actually, I very seldom do unless it's a...
I know you do.
A show that I am you know, somewhat related to. Yeah, and it's like, and I'm very careful even not doing too many collations.
Well, the current show has a little bit of connection, there's a little more than that. But
yeah,
why
the current show, the current
it?
Show and is...
Before you start, let's just tell people, this is the Sisson Gallery. It's in the Fine Arts Center on the Henry Ford College main campus, okay, in the Fine Arts Building, sometimes called that. And it's...
The Mackenzie Fine Arts Building.
Mackenzie is the first name also.
Or Building F.
The donor name, Mackenzie Fine Arts Building. And so in that gallery, which is, the curator, is that the name, of for Steve?
I'm director of exhibitions for the campus.
Yeah. And so he plans what the exhibits are, and we have, would you say, about six a year?
We have six exhibitions. We have three professional exhibitions and three student shows each.
Yeah, student shows, and of course, those are able to be, people can buy things from those, certainly.
Sometimes.
Yeah, not always. Depends on the artist. Yeah. Okay, tell us about the current show.
The current show is a show called Resonance, Eastern Michigan University Ceramics Alumni, under the tutelage of Suzanne Stevenson and John Lurie. And it has sort of a personal history to me, because I went to Eastern, and it sort of accidentally ended up being on display at Henry Ford. Mm-hmm. It's a very pleasant accident on my part, mm-hmm. or for me.
Yeah.
But the whole idea of the show started a year and a half ago when I was approached by the Michigan Ceramic Arts Association asking if Henry Ford College would like to host their biennial Michigan MUD Conference. Michigan MUD.
That's another cute way to refer to it. They don't do any slinging of MUD, but yeah, okay. That's safe.
Academic MUD.
Yeah, the MUD slinging is safe for the politicians.
Yeah. Okay. And the school, I agreed to it, and Randy Knight was the associate dean at the time and supported it and stuff. Mm-hmm. So we did that, or proceeded on the road to doing that. So I was invited to take part in board meetings as conference host. And I asked the organization if they had ever done any Lifetime Achievement Awards. And as far as anyone knew, at least in recent memory, no one, mm-hmm. the board had not. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't find any history of that. So I suggested that we give a Lifetime Achievement Award to the two individuals, Suzanne Stevenson and John Lurie, who had been the Eastern Michigan University ceramics program from mm-hmm. about 1962 was when John Lurie was hired. I think Sue Stevenson followed one or two years later. And John stopped teaching ceramics because of hand trouble in, I believe, the mid-80s or early 80s, and Suzanne retired in 1991.
So what's in the exhibit itself?
But during that
examples
31
of their
years,
work?
Yeah, I'm getting to that.
Okay, yeah. I'm getting
Eastern
excited.
Eastern Michigan
here.
Was sort of the premier school not only Southeast Michigan, but the lower half or most of Michigan for ceramics.
Okay.
And so I proposed that these two be given Lifetime Achievement Awards because of that. And when the board, I brought names of a bunch of people that went through the program to the board. And after they approved, I wrote email to the person who runs the gallery at Eastern Michigan and the person who was acting head of the art department, and said, you should really do an exhibition honoring these two. And not of their work, but of all their students' work over the years.
Who are they influenced?
Yeah.
Direct influence,
the people,
really.
And at first it was, well, why? Mm-hmm. And so again, it was, and the why was because, over the years, different personnel has changed. And the current people at Eastern had no idea that so many people had come through the program that were either teaching, or by this time a couple of them have even retired, or doing, had become major or fairly well-known artists, both national and international, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. on their own. And they were all products of the Eastern Michigan University ceramics program over this 30-year period. Mm-hmm.
So it's a wide variety of pieces.
Some
semi-functional, like plates and cups.
There are some functional.
But
there's
some
sculptural. There's even a few pieces that aren't even clay, because these people mm-hmm. were doing clay when they were in school, but they're not doing clay now. There's two bronze bodices by Mary Koss, who now lives in Seattle, and has shown internationally, has gotten a national endowment grant.
Is bodice a better way of saying bust?
Sort of, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's what they artsy. Look like is, yeah, they're
It's bronze, like head and shoulders
no,
of a
they're,
person?
They're
no,
bronze, okay. Almost like bustiers.
Ooh.
Woman's bustiers.
Oh, it's just a model of the outfit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that I got to get over there. And it's already open.
Yes,
it's been open.
And it opened when the semester started.
Okay, so it's going to continue until?
It continues through September 30th.
Okay.
And so what happened at Eastern, if I can go on just...
Yeah.
Once they heard that all these people were part of the program there for all these years, and they started thinking about it, I said, look... If for no other reason, you should be connecting with all these alumni because that's potential money. And then all of a sudden, it's like, wow, maybe we should.
Okay.
So they decided to put together this exhibition. And I got called in to help because it was my idea, or at least to bring it forth to them. And so we started, Greg Tom, who is the gallery director at Eastern Michigan, my counterpart there, he and I started... going through the internet. He went, had the alumni office, went through whatever records they could find. And we found, 70-some names that went through the ceramics program. And so we started emailing or calling everyone we could. Ended up with 30 that participated. And there's several that are fairly big names that we never got a hold of. We could never track down.
Maybe you can have a second follow-up, part two or something.
But and right from the get-go, it was decided that we'd ask everyone to contribute 2, 3, maybe 4 pieces to the show. And once we realized that there's going to be 30 people, the Eastern people looked at me and it's like, we don't have room for all this. So it's like, how about if we split it? So since I'm helping you, half of it stays at Eastern and half of it's at Henry Ford College. And so there's two exhibitions, same title, running concurrently, one at the Ford Gallery in Ford Hall on the campus of Eastern Michigan University, and one in the Sisson Gallery on the Henry Ford campus here in Dearborn.
Well, that's great. That's great. And again, people will find this so amazing and so entertaining, too, even in our gallery is relatively small. I mean, it's not like
it's a whole building. It's not huge. And Eastern has 3 galleries and the Ford gallery is about the
same size. But it gives them time to get up close and spend time appreciating the 30 or 40 pieces that are there, right?
There's about
40 pieces. And the days and times, real quick?
It is open.
And it's free, of course.
It's free. It is open, at least the Eastern show. I don't have the dates and time.
Just tell about us.
At Henry Ford, we are open 9 until 4:30 on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays, and 9 a.m. till 8 p.m. on Wednesdays, or by appointment if someone gives me a call or an email. My office phone is 313-845-6485. If I'm not in my office, which I'm very seldom in because I spend most of my office hours either doing gallery stuff or supervising in the clay room.
Because the classes are studio classes, of course. I mean, there's lecture that you do and demonstration, but then you're assisting during the studio portion, sometimes called a lab, but I mean, it's really creative portion.
And that's how we keep the room open is we have 3 part-time techs, limited hours.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm the only one that is available to do afternoon stuff this semester. So my office hours are spent in the clay room, and it's like I'm helping students. I'm mixing clay or loading kilns or unloading kilns.
This is an amazing program because, again, when I was in the fine arts department and was head of performing arts, when art department was a separate department over there in that building, so I was in that building with the telecommunication area and was head of performing arts for 10 years. So I got to see the gallery and the displays up close for all that time, and it's absolutely amazing, folks, the variety of pieces that are on display there and the quality of the exhibitions that it's all because of the great directors of the galleries that we've had that try to make that happen. So it's a smaller gallery, but it's very, very special, and it is free, and it's a great experience. Can I ask you, I don't like to ask a gotcha question, but John has a question too, finally, here. But what are the career opportunities? I mean, for an artist or someone using the ceramics background in a more practical mm-hmm. way, like some of those industries mm-hmm. that use clay in some part of their work?
Yeah. I'm put on the spot, but it's like I'll work my way through it. Mm-hmm. Basically, at Henry Ford, our ceramics program is twofold. One, it's a part of an art foundation's or transfer program to a four-year university
sure.
to study ceramics or to get an art degree with an emphasis in ceramics.
Okay.
It right. gives you a very good foundation for that. Mm-hmm. The other half of that, or the other side of it, is people that just want to, you know, that they know either, you know, coming out of high school or coming out of, you know, I have one gentleman who was in the Navy and then some time at Adrian College and took a ceramics class there, fell in love with it. This is what he wants to do.
Yeah. Right.
He wants to somehow fit that into his career.
Fully develop the yeah, skill themselves. And
so it's, you know, I've a few students that are doing it, looking at it from that standpoint, both young adults, and then I have a couple of people, two or three right now, who are retirees, and this is what they've always wanted to do.
Yes.
It's like they've sure. done, you have one student who was a corporate, you know, office worker for what, 30, 40 years, and it's mm-hmm. like she always wanted to work on a potter's wheel.
Mm-hmm. John so Conroy always that. Wanted to talk on a microphone
yeah.
here.
And so she's yeah. yeah, has come to Henry Ford since she's, you know, from Dearborn, and is now selling her work, you know, and or starting uh-huh. to yeah. participate in off-campus uh-huh. sales and stuff. And, you know, this is her what she's always wanted to do for her yeah. life coming through.
I bought just a couple of pieces, usually mugs or bowls or something. They're just so beautiful, and I have so many at my house now. I don't really have much space left, but it's they're relatively reasonably priced, too. I mean, when it's just students starting out, your work should be worth a fortune. I was absolutely amazed. I don't know what your prices are. Don't tell me. But I'm just saying that great artists, whether it's painting or ceramics, which is still a completely viable competitive art. I mean, there's that whole museum in Ann Arbor in Toronto too.
Yeah, there is a museum in Ann Arbor called the Dinnerware Museum, but it's oh, yeah? it had a storefront for a short time. It is now basically a storage. Yes, somewhere, and then the woman who runs it will set it up. Will okay. set up exhibitions. Wow.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's something to look into again as yeah. a creative art, whether it for people of any age, just to you know, personal enrichment, personal expression, creative mm-hmm. expression. But also, there are ways that those skills you can make money of them as an artist and in certain industries. Again, if you had, let's say, background in design and probably the CGI skills in that, maybe you could become part of one of those labs that do the clay models of cars.
Design,
but very competitive stuff to be
it is,
at that level.
But it's like you know. I tell students, with anything in life, if you're good,
you'll find ways to make
a living, or you'll be in demand.
That's right. Somebody will come
it's
to
like,
you.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I just tell them, go to the better art fairs, not, you know, your little small town, you know, two block middle of Main Street. Go through the Ann Arbor Art Fair. Go through the Columbus Arts Festival. Go to the Crosby Art Fair, which is Toledo art fair this in June that takes place at their Botanical Gardens, and look at these people. And these people are they're making a living off of it. And so,
John has got a question.
Stephen, do you have do you rotate the pieces between the Sisson Gallery and the Ford Gallery at all?
No, this show is it's what we did, and that's a very good question because I don't know if it was just spontaneous or what, but you know, when we had everything shipped to Eastern Michigan because this is really their show, their alumni, And on the day that I was supposed to come and help pack up part of it to go to Eastern, Greg Tom got out some yellow
post-it notes,
yeah. Okay. And some blue ones, and gave me one packet and said, go to each artist and pick out one
for your
one
gallery.
Of the three that you want.
Great.
And then he did the same. And
who got some, there first?
Yeah, and some of it was who got there first, and some was some negotiating. It's like, you know, I really like this. Well, so do I.
Mm-hmm.
I really like this, and you're kind of iffy about it. So how about, yeah, I'll take this, and then you could have that one.
Flip us around a coin.
Yes. I'm so sorry. So there was some negotiating, and I think there's a couple pieces that I wish was it. I wish. Henry Ford.
Well, it sounds like such a special selection. You could almost arrange, since those choices have already been made, you could also arrange maybe with other galleries. I know sometimes exhibits go on tour.
Yeah.
But
this is very special.
Yeah. This one's really special. Yeah.
Yeah. The fact that it's at both, and we're going to have a reception at both places.
Oh, right. That's good.
And the reception is coming up later, actually.
Yes, ours is closing. I intentionally wanted it to be after Eastern's because Eastern is using this. Yeah, it's really their show. It's their alumni.
Right.
We were asked to do this because they.
So is that September 30th also?
September 30th, the last day is the reception here. Okay. The Friday before is the reception at Eastern.
And any additional information about the ceramics program, of course, Steve Glazer, he's the man to talk to. It's Glazer.
Like email one of the
glazes is, that's right. I had to go into it because of glazing, you know. Oh, okay. And it's just S Glazer, so it's Sglazer at hfcc.edu. We can give a phone number. If people are listening to a podcast, they can always rewind it and play it back.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
313-845-6485.
6485, yeah. I know we gave that earlier. Well, it's been great to have you on here. I mean, there's so many great programs at the college. This is one like telecommunication and music and other areas of the art department, too, that are sort of outreach. I mean, they're intended to connect with the community and draw the community in, not just as students, but also for cultural enrichment.
Right,
and
we have the gallery
with positive
the performing,
experiences.
The bands, the theater, and so the stuff that goes in that building is just incredible. It's like it's beyond so many community colleges.
Well, we're happy to get the word out and have you as official representative this time, not just for blues, but also for the ceramics program, which is his day job. Steve Glazer, 313-845-6485
correct.
Is his phone number for information about the gallery exhibit, the Sisson Gallery, Sisson, in the Fine Arts Center, McKenzie Fine Arts Center, main campus, Henry Ford College. So thank you for being on the Journal today,
Thank you
Steve.
Very much.
Great to
thank
have you.
Much, Jay.
And we're going to be back with local news and alternative views like crazy. We're going to listen to some commentaries from Jack Lessenberry here about what's happening locally. This is going to start with a commentary about news and the death of the newspaper. And can news really survive with only the WHFR Journal? That's the big question. No, he doesn't answer that one directly. But here we go. And we'll be back with more of the Journal.
I'm Jack Lessenberry. This may strike you as silly, but a little relatively insignificant thing happened today that put a lump in my throat. It has to do with the Newspaper Association of America, the group that has represented major newspaper publishers since Grover Cleveland was in the White House. I was never part of that group, which is mainly for newspaper owners, not ink-stained writers and editors, my tribe, back in the day. We moaned and complained about publishers, often because we saw them as skinflints who wouldn't pay us what we thought we were worth. But we secretly knew publishers were necessary, and nobody even 20 years ago thought there might be a time in which newspapers no longer existed. Well, that was then, and this is now, and today, the Newspaper Association of America officially changes its name to the News Media Alliance. If you think that's because conventional newspapers are dying, you're mostly right. But not completely. In a story published Monday, David Chavern, the head of the newly renamed Alliance, told the New York Times that the word newspaper was becoming meaningless when it comes to many traditional news organizations, including the Times itself. While they still publish newspapers, larger and larger percentages of their readers and viewers see their work online. In fact, more people than ever are seeing newspaper company products. Analyzing all this, the Times attempted to cast these developments with a positive spin, headlining their article, "Yes, the news can survive the newspaper." But I'm not so sure. Yes, we'll get tons of Kardashian news, and major cataclysmic events will still go on being covered. But what about traditional, important news? Who will give Grand Rapidians the information they need to know about a potential new zoning-busting development in their city? Who will keep an eye on the officials in Chelsea and Dexter? Will anyone know if there's a horrendous financial scandal in Flushing? You know the answer. And for all the talk that dead tree newspapers are obsolete technology, everyone in the industry still gets most of their revenue from ads in printed newspapers. Those ads have been declining, as has printed newspaper circulation. But nobody's yet figured out how to make digital ads nearly as profitable. And as the Times story notes, the newspaper of the future will most likely have to do so with fewer resources and a smaller, classically trained reporting staff. That means letting some stories go uncovered. Yet, which ones? Many of the most important stories don't come wrapped in a bow proclaiming their importance. If the ability to generate clicks is a standard, then anything resembling democracy is probably doomed. I realize that I'm of another generation who still remembers the thrill of seeing my first byline in print. But yesterday, someone brought into my office a few yellowing newspapers from 1975. They were physically larger than today's papers, filled with boring black and white photos, and a cascade of fascinating and important stories on all manner of subjects someone scrolling down an online list never sees. That paper went out of business long ago. I have no idea if its readers know what they lost. And I'm not at all sure we know what we're going to lose.
Jack Lessenberry is Michigan Radio's news analyst.
But WHFR Radio is still here. And yes, the WHFR Journal is every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. And it is local news about Dearborn and the surrounding area that you just can't get anywhere else on the dial. And if you're not subscribing to a newspaper, let me just run down quickly. Just in the last 2 weeks, the stories we couldn't get to. Well, there's so many. There's so many. But if you had a subscription to the Dearborn Times Herald or the Dearborn Press and Guide, you would have been able to pick a few of these up. Yes, you would have. And just let me grab these and go through rather quickly, because we got some brand new stories that we've got to cover too today. And we only have 25 minutes left before Highway 61, Best in the Blues with Kitty Love, comes on the air. On Wednesday, August 24th, we have a story there on a speech by both Mayor O'Reilly and I think also by Mayor Pletko, maybe not. The story seems to indicate that Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr. Gave a speech at the Rotary Club of Dearborn at Park Place on August 18th. And the story was the front page story in the Times Herald of August 24th. He gave an update on multiple projects. He talked about the Ford Motor Company $1.5 billion redevelopment. They're working on downtown development authorities and corridor authorities. Corridors means down a particular road in Dearborn that doesn't have a lot of business development on one side or the other or both, and they identify that as a specific area. So it's not just Warren, it's not just Michigan Avenue or Schaefer. We always think of those, I think, as three of the east side, anyway, corridors. And of course, Michigan Avenue being pretty much the only corridor you think of when you think of West Dearborn. So they added an area of Dix Werner, too, to that. And house sales, he says, played a big role in the improvement of the city. People moving to Dearborn from out of the state. O'Reilly said he discovered that people are being recruited by Ford for jobs and choosing to live in the city. So that's good that there's some chance to live close to where you work, too. And, of course, that new campus is great. Let's see, any other headlines, I mean, any other major points from that, the speech that he made there. Of course, he thanks all the residents, as we told you at homecoming, for renewing a temporary 3.5 mil tax levy in the August 2nd primary. That's just renewing what we're already paying as a supplement, because our city taxes still have not built up. I mean, property values have risen, but the value, it's the Headley Amendment, Proposition A from back in the 90s that we passed, doesn't allow the taxes to keep up with the property value. Isn't that amazing? it's going to take like another maybe 8 or 10 years before the two happen to be the same. And so for another 5 years, the city voters of Dearborn did say yes, they're willing to, majority did say yes, they're willing to continue that 3.5 mil levy for another 5 years. And we'll see what happens after that, of course. A brief session, question and answer was held, and the club members were asked on different issues about Ford's plans for attracting new people and jobs, property lot size construction, how school property, and the new Veterans Park and War Memorial. We'll tell you about the dedication of that facility, too, which is just coming up in a couple of weeks. And he was asked, Mayor O'Reilly was asked about the Oakwood-Beaumont merger. And he said that, interestingly, before the change, Oakwood Hospital explored the possibility of building a women's hospital all by itself. I mean, just to treat women. Wow. I guess that's not going to happen now. Anyway, for lot size building, he said the city has bought and sold hundreds of 40-foot side yard lot land in hopes that residents will build a driveway, garage, or summer room. So the neighborhoods will, I mean, some of the smaller houses can become somewhat larger houses and attract, people that want to pay more money for a bigger house, too. Okay, that's that issue. Let me, again, stumble through another one really quick. From Sunday, August 28th, let me take a look. good news, Katie Hedrick, again, the freelance reporter who for many, many, many years has been the education reporter for the Press and Guide, who is in, and she is now just part-time with them, and I think still full-time with the city. I hope she is, anyway. Very good writer, very good reporter about what's happening in the schools in Dearborn. And she gives very complete stories. And one of the good news is points is that Edsel Ford High School is poised to move off the low-performing list. So that was several years ago. They were given 3 years to have better outcomes in terms of students learning. And they've done it. And so everything is looking very good, according to all the people who commented at that meeting back in August. Okay, so congratulations to Edsel Ford and the Dearborn Public Schools. John had a story because it's coming up quick, but there it was back in Sunday, August 28th. The fall season of Global Fridays is going to begin next Friday. Do you have that in front of you, John?
Yes, I do, Jay.
Why don't you tell people about that while I keep turning the pages over here?
Sure thing. Yes, the 2016 fall season opens September 16th with a jazz workshop at 5 p.m., followed by an 8 p.m. performance by Daphnis Prieto COC Quartet, a revolutionary drummer and composer who has had a powerful impact on the global Latin and jazz scene. This classically trained musician at the National School of Music in Havana, Cuba, takes pride in the multifaceted percussive traditions of his homeland. The Global Fridays festivities continue at 6:30 on October 7th with an open mic, a reception and gallery stroll of the What We Carried, Fragments from the Cradle of Civilization exhibition, followed by Nora, a staged reading by award-winning Iraqi-American playwright performer, as a slash performer, Heather Raffo, at 8 p.m.
Okay. So next Friday, 8 p.m.,
yep.
Arab American National Museum, and it's actually their annex building, but all the free parking right just right north, right behind, not Michigan Avenue, the other side of the building there. And the and cost actually, is reasonable, I think, yeah. 15? Oh, it doesn't matter. It's worth it.
$15 general public and $10 if you're a member of the museum.
That's A-A-N-M. Right. I just want to say that, you know, the Global Fridays, and it's not every Friday, but when they do a Global Friday, I think it's usually just once a month in terms of music. The artists are world-renowned. I mean, they're great. They're classic. And if you say, well, I don't know their names. I never heard their names before. Don't worry about it. Just go anyway. You'll be totally amazed. You'd be just totally amazed. I remember our longtime DJ, Joanne Korczynska, loved world music, even though she was our blues music director and our blues DJ here for 25 years before she passed away earlier this year. But she was absolutely amazed and fascinated by those performances. It's kind of like the same quality we see down at Concert of Colors when they perform in downtown Detroit. But it's being done almost every month, at least once a month, right here at the Arab American National Museum. And they have a great facility for those performances. So it's a great small venue.
And I want to add that, you know, Stephen Glazer was talking about his ceramics, and there's a great, there are also many exhibits of art at the Arab American National Museum, as well as a library that not too many people take them avail of, but is very well up-to-date library of Arab American writers.
Well, a lot going on there, so we want to keep you informed, and certainly about alternative choices that can really expand your mind and amaze you. What was amazing to me, looking back at the papers, Times Herald from August 31st, moving closer to the present, on the front page of that paper, historic Comerica branch bank is to close and consolidate with a newer branch. So Comerica is not closing, but it's closing its historical Michigan Neckel branch. That's Michigan and Neckel is the location. And that's in West Dearborn. And merge it with its Michigan American Road branch. I don't know where American Road is either. Okay, anyway. The announcement comes as part of Comerica's growth in efficiency and revenue initiative. Trying to cut money, make profits. And it's too bad. Just because it's a classic building, it was on a corner location. For some reason, they had special accounts or special services for businesses. I know a lot of small businesses did banking through Comerica. And I think even Henry Ford Community College years ago used that Comerica Bank branch for its accounts. So whatever. It's just too bad that everything has to be modern style if there's... certainly the old City Hall is now Art Space, going to be a grand opening in a while.
September 21st.
Right, we'll talk a little more about that. But I assume unless somebody else moves in there that might be torn down for some other building. We don't know about what's forthcoming there. Food Truck Wednesdays is mentioned in the City of Dearborn e-newsletter, and you can go to cityofdearborn.org to look at it on their website. But it's one of the many stories there is that Wednesdays all the way through October 26, one fantastic food truck at least will be there each Wednesday. Next Wednesday on the 24th, it's a food truck company called Saucy Joe's. Mm-hmm. So would that be like Sloppy Joe's, but with heavy...
Sausage only.
Or it was sausage, but no, it's saucy, not sausage.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Saucy. Yeah. Saucy. So it's spicy, maybe. I mean, the sauce makes everything, right? I mean, it's not just the hamburger. Hamburger you can get anywhere, but it's the sauce that makes the difference. That's what a gourmet chef would say.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for agreeing. Anyway, moving on. Rock music history is at the... Pedzieski Gallery in Dearborn right now, and that's going to continue through October 8th. Okay. Rock music history. That's right. Pictures, sculpture, all kinds of things going on right there in the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. Hours are noon to 6 p.m., Tuesday through Fridays, and certain weekends. Okay. So, and that's free to go in and see, too, and that's a great thing. All right. Going quickly again, I don't know how I feel about this, but the state of Michigan legislature, oh yeah, big guys in the legislature up there, they are going crazy usually, and we criticize them because it's Republican controlled and they can do whatever they want to. There's not even a question of a competition there. But At this point, it's our Dearborn Heights, our Democrat from Dearborn Heights, David Kinesic in the Senate, and Marty Nolenberg, who is Republican from Troy. They want to see the decision about the school's year start be put back in the hands of local districts. And they're co-sponsoring a three-bill package that would do just that. So if passed, the legislation would eliminate the post-Labor Day start that's now required for all K-12 schools and leave setting... the academic calendar to local school districts. Well, I'm all in favor of local control, but it seems a little bit inconsistent to have it going on everywhere. However, I happen to know from personal experience, because my granddaughter is in a parochial school, They started a week before Labor Day. And didn't seem to bother her at all, although it cut short her vacation. And that's just the way that goes. So, local control is a good concept. I'm not sure exactly if any of the local districts, it doesn't say in the story here, if like Dearborn Public Schools has asked Kinesic to do this bill. Obviously, it would give them more days in the school year or allow the kids out earlier in June.
No, but I believe there are many, many school districts are thinking along those lines, Jay, because as it is, there were already two high school football games played and whatever fall sports have started before the kids have even gone back to school or gone back to classes.
So we're doing it for the sake of football then?
Maybe, I don't know if that's for the sake of football, but it is true that that most schools have already played two football games before the actual start of their regular classroom sessions.
Well, again, I just thought it was an interesting turn of events. It hasn't been passed yet to give that option, but as I said, private schools are parochial schools. It's one of the same, isn't it, sort of?
Yeah.
One is church-related, private institution. They can start whenever they want to. They just have a certain number of days they have to accomplish. So,
yep.
Okay. Looking at Times Herald for Wednesday, September 7th, Dearborn Heights bought 15 houses in a flood-prone area. And they applied for but they didn't use their own money. They applied for a $2.8 million Federal Emergency Management Agency Hazard Mitigation Grant after the August 2014 flood was quite a disaster. So they were able to buy out under that, because of the grant, 15 homes that were adjacent to and near the Ecorse Creek on Hanover Street. And those homes will be demolished, and the lots will feature natural wildflowers with extensive root systems, which will help prevent flooding to further areas.
For further areas, that's right.
Sop up all that excess water when the next time it comes there. So your federal government at work there, folks. That's a federal government grant. I'm just saying, people always say, federal government never gets anything right. I think those people, there's a picture on the front of the Times
Those,
Herald. They look very happy.
Those homeowners look like they've made a good deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Quite a story, and it's in even an editorial comment in the Arab American News this week about a Dearborn Heights teen who was killed in a motorcycle crash. There's far too many of these stories, I think, because there's automobile crashes all the time, and they're usually related to alcohol. But it seems, that's got to be horrendous, and it is, because you're not riding in a metal box. You're on top of a big engine and the wheels and the gas tank. And this was an Arab American young man. His name was Mohammed Hazim, and the little problem was police investigated, and definitely he was going way above the speed limit. It happened at 12:30 in the morning on August 28th. He ran into the back of a Jeep, so it wasn't somebody ran into him.
Oh.
Okay, and he did not possess even a valid motorcycle endorsement on his license, which means he didn't pass a state of Michigan approved sort of safety test just to see if he could handle a motorcycle. It's usually done, I think, down in the Wyandotte office of Secretary of State. They have a little course in the back lot, and at low speeds, not high speeds, they take you around. Because apparently, from my knowledge of being a motorcycle rider and still having an endorsement on my license, watch out, I might get out there someday again, is that if the state's and the professionals' argument is, if you can handle a motorcycle at very low speeds, if you have the balance to do that, turns left, right, stopping quickly, and so on at low speeds, you can generally handle the high speeds. It doesn't say here whether or not he was wearing a helmet, but it looked like the fault was his. And a lot of the Arab American community have commented in the story that's in Arab American News this week that they won't go anywhere near a motorcycle, and the parents won't let their kids have one. They're far too dangerous. Not as a motorcycle enthusiast myself, that's not necessarily true. They need adequate training and experience. They can't just get a motorcycle and think they know how to handle it. Just like you need driver ed and practice for several years before you get a full-fledged license endorsement to drive on the highways. And motorcycles are definitely a problem. One reason is because car drivers can't see you that much, and so Just like if you're riding a bicycle alone, you can get hit by a car more easily too, either on a motorcycle or a bicycle. But I do recommend people get those training courses. We offer one here at Henry Ford College every summer, the Motorcycle Safety Foundation training class. It lasts several weeks. They're professionals. I've gone through that class myself. It's a great way to get training. And then, of course, get that motorcycle endorsement. Let the state of Michigan test you, too. And by all means, wear a helmet. It's clearly been proven now after several years, no thanks to the legislature, allowing you not to wear a helmet, that it's going to cause greater fatalities, greater injuries to you if you do accidentally fall off or get knocked off or you run into a wall or something. That's horrendous, but you need proper training. You need proper safety materials too. Don't ride in tennis shoes. Okay. Don't ride in shorts. There's all kinds of ways to protect yourself from just even a minor scrape or bruise, but certainly a safety helmet is the first step of protection. It's even recommended for people that ride bicycles. So if it's recommended for bicycle riders to be safe if they accidentally fall off their bikes, young kids included there, what about motorcyclists? Yes, you should wear it. Well, I want the right not to have to wear it. It's actually stupid, okay? I don't see anything wrong with the government regulation to encourage you not to be stupid. Oh, well. Oh, well. Okay. Veterans War Memorial. John, I don't know if you have the story. Oh, I have it here, so you can do that. Coming up on the 24th of September.
Yes, the public's invited to attend the dedication of the Dearborn Veterans Park and War Memorial on Saturday, September 24th. To honor those who gave their lives in service to our country, as well as all who have served in the military in peacetime and war, the ceremony begins at 10 a.m. in front of the Henry Ford Centennial Library, 16301 Michigan Ave. And that goes along with my every Friday shout-out about wearing red. Mm-hmm. Remember everyone deployed to honor our veterans overseas and at home. Mm-hmm. R-E-D, remember everyone deployed. I have wanted to do a little quick shout out to Benny of Benny and the Jets. His birthday was went to a birthday celebration with him last night.
Oh, good old Benny,
Redford Moose.
And he still has his beautiful beard, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. and long silver hair. Mm-hmm. That was a great time and well attended. Tonight is Top Dog Jazz Friday, bringing jazz to Dearborn every Friday, 7 to 10. The Rich Michaels Trio will be there as normal, and Edward Gooch, trombone player, will be playing with them this Friday night. Come one and come all. Enjoy yourselves.
Okay. Got three stories here that I wanted to get through before the end of the hour. Maybe Johnson got something else briefly we can toss in here. This one is from the New York Times. Back in April, suicide in America surges to its highest rate in 30 years. And interestingly, that the group that was in their study, and this is a study from 1999 to 2014, according to the National Center for Health Statistics, it's that American Indians had the sharpest rise of all racial and ethnic groups, with rates rising by 89% for women and 38% for men. And that's terrible. That's awful. And you could think about why. Maybe because they culturally have been, while our culture has been undercut and destroyed for 200 plus years by the European invasion, I'll call it that. Of course, all opinions on the show, got to get this in before the end of the hour, are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College. But also women, white middle-aged women had an increase of 80% in suicides, and veterans that John just mentioned. You know, there was a story in the News Herald, I know downriver this week, that in Taylor, the death of a Marine who had returned home after service, 21 years old only, committed suicide, they decided after investigation. How sad. That veterans are still averaging 22 suicides per day. So something wrong with war, isn't there? If even after the fact, our valiant warriors can't find life good enough to continue with. I mean, really, it's very sad. There's something wrong there. In Detroit last weekend, while I was out of town at the Detroit market, Eastern Market, Green Party candidate presidential Jill Stein and her running mate, Ajamu Baraka. That's right, his last name is Baraka, not Barack Obama. It's Baraka is his last name. He's a very famous civil rights advocate. I won't go into all of his background, but it's Dr. Jill Stein and her running mate. We're both campaigning in Detroit here, and they're giving interviews and meeting the people for 3 hours down at the market. It's interesting. And this full story is in the Arab American News print paper and on their website, ArabAmericanNews.com. Where is that story in the other local papers? I'm just saying, you know, that the Green Party, as well as Gary Johnson of the Libertarian Party, are on the ballot in Michigan. If you don't know about them, obviously you're not going to vote for them. But if you know about them, and again, a majority of people don't like Hillary, majority of people don't like Donald Trump, well, you've got other choices. You don't have to vote for the lesser evil. You might find that either the Green Party or the Libertarian Party, and they're different, folks. I'm not recommending one over the other or even either one of them, but they're out there. How can you say I'm not in favor of them if you don't know what they are? I don't think that's smart. By the way, where is Jill Stein and Ajamu Baraka right now? They're under arrest in the Dakotas because of the civil rights protest. The Sioux Indians up there are trying to prevent the destruction of their tribal burial grounds.
Oh.
Yep. And now there are two Green Party presidents are under arrest, too, for trespass and civil disobedience. But nonviolent.
No.
Nonviolent.
No.
Okay. But they do that. That's part of their campaign. Social justice is very important to the Green Party candidates. I don't see Donald Trump out there. I don't see Barack Obama out there either, or Hillary Clinton. No one is out there helping the Indians in their battle against what's called the Dakota Pipeline. It's a long story. Yeah. Right. It's there's all kinds of reasons against that, I think, if you want to read into that. Last but not least, and I know it's 2:00, it's WHFR Dearborn finishing up here. It is because Kitty Love has got the greatest assortment of blues, but it's now 15 years after 9/11. There's an editorial in the Arab American News, ArabAmericanNews.com, yes, for this week, talking about that 15 years have passed. And terrorism is worse than ever. They do criticize harshly the Bush and the Obama administrations for failing to contain and destroy the extremism that led to the murder of thousands of Americans on 9/11. And, of course, Obama's drone attacks have only perpetuated the notion, they say, that America is an enemy of the people of the Middle East because of so many innocent lives that have been, you know, ended because of those attacks. Well, that's all we have time for today in the Journal. Come back next Friday. We're scheduled for, it's going to be a big Friday. We got yes, HFC President Stan Jensen, the big man, the man at the top. The buck stops there. He's going to be on the show in the first half hour. In the second half hour,
as well as Rochelle Taylor, HFC's athletic director.
Right. We have athletic program. We've got competition. We've got skills you can learn, move your muscles, but come and support our teams, and just the whole range of stories. Rochelle is going to be coming and having a nice interview with us after President Jensen. So, got to come back. And we're scheduling like crazy a number of candidates that are running for election in November also. I've got some emails out there, and a couple of people have already responded, and we'll get the dates here. Oh, yeah. Local activist, civilian activist, Regan Ford is going to be on our show on the 23rd. And he's going to talk about, he's also president of the Dearborn Rotary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and writes a lot of editorials. So we're going to do that. Yes, we are. Bye, John.
Bye-bye, Jay. Mm-hmm. Can I have time for one more quickie?
Okay, quickie.
We got tonight is our closing concert on Gros Eel with Bill Bynum, the end of summer concerts at 7 p.m. tonight. Come one and come all to the Gros Eel Commons at Meridian and Macomb. Thank you.
And it is free, isn't it?
Yes, it is free.
All right. Have fun down on Gros Eel. Take care, folks. Good night. Bye-bye.